Good afternoon, everyone, and I'll call the Thursday, April 14th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules to order. And we are a little short of a quorum, but no short of eyes and ears to listen to testimony. So I will start by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 340. And Erin, could you tell us about 340?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 340 directs the Legislative Assembly to review state agencies and programs, taxes, and fees administered by state agencies every 6 years, establishes Sunset Advisory Commission, directs the Commission to review and evaluate state agencies and programs, taxes and fees administered, and make recommendations on abolition or continuation of agencies and programs, taxes and fees. Abolishes state agencies that are not continued by legislative act during the year review, and the provisions requiring review of state agencies and programs, taxes, or fees administered by state agencies becomes operative January 1st, 2013, and it prohibits abolishment of state agency under act until earlier of review of agency or 2020. There may have a revenue or a fiscal impact. We have not received them yet.
Thank you, Erin. And I see Senator Winters and Senator Boquist are here, so if you please come forward and tell us about your bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Senator Jackie Winters. I represent Senate District 10, which includes Salem, Monmouth, Independence, and Almsville, and Turner. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 340. Senate Bill 340 is a common sense oversight bill, which contains two main functions. First, it directs the Legislative Assembly to review state agencies and programs, taxes and fees administered by state agency every 6 years. The bill also creates a Sunset Advisory Commission, which prior to the time the agency or program is to be continued or abolished, will review and report to the Legislative Assembly that recommendations to either continue or abolish. The criteria used to make the determination is based on the mission of the agency, the extent to which the objectives have been achieved, or whether program or agency can be consolidated into another, etc. I found it interesting that there was one time in the history of this building where we really did have a systematic review of programs. The reason for that was to make a determination whether the intended mission, in fact, was still necessary or not, whether we were still getting the value of such program or objectives or not, or whether the situations or time had changed, which meant that we needed to make a new direction or not. It's similar to what when we look at the review this session of tax credits and what have you, because often, as you know, this legislative body continues to add on. We never go back and revisit those things that we have done. And this Senate Bill 340 would allow us to do that. It would allow us to actually be a lot more judicious in what we do. It would also allow us to eliminate programs or commissions that are not working or functioning, and it would allow us to become a lot more efficient in our work. And so I would ask for your support of Senate Bill 340. I think it's long overdue, and I hadn't known when I returned back to the building that we weren't just routinely and automatically revisiting those actions which we have taken in this body.
Thank you, Madam Chair, colleagues, Senator Boquist, District 12, and I see that Senator Burdick is walking into the room, because I liken this bill to something that Senator Burdick has started this session to her, and I'd compliment her on that, and that is to go and do a tax credit review of all the tax credits that are out there and start a routine process of reviewing tax credits and see what's working and what's not working. And that's sort of what we're talking about right here. To give you an example, if you go to the governor's budget and you went down to LFO, and LFO, as published and many of you have seen, LFO has identified at this particular time pieces of tax fee increases amounting to $30 million, which are tied to pieces of legislation. And so we've identified this $30 million fee increase that's out there. If you then go to the I annex of the governor's budget and you look down through his columns, you'll come down to a bottom where it says other funds increases made up of fees, and that number is about $2.8 billion in increases. And for some reason, there's a mathematical difference between $30 million and $2.8 billion in trying to figure what's going on. Now, long before I came to this legislature, I had an issue in my district about river maintenance or dredging, and I inherited it from Representative Thompson, who inherited it from Representative Shutterly, who inherited that 1994 issue from Senator Mayee. And I still have a bill this session, and it hasn't been addressed yet. But ironically, 3 years after that started in 1997, the legislature did find that, scratching its head, that where are all these fees, and is there a consolidated report? And so a very short bill of about three lines was passed in the 1997 session, went through both chambers, signed by the governor. And so there is a report that comes out. And it was interesting on the floor several days ago, Senator Johnson talked about that school report. She held it up and flipped through it. And it was about the size of a ream of paper. And you could, despite what she said, if the Department of Education actually did read a couple of those reports every year, and the rest of them were all wasted, and of course we voted to eliminate those reports. I have sitting on my desk that fee report that DAS produces. The problem with it is it's too big to bring down here. And the second thing is every third page starts a new area, and it is not consolidated in any manner whatsoever. So in order for us to figure out what that report said for 2 years ago, I would have to hire someone from the Kelly Girls, pay them for about 6 weeks to two months so that they could go in there and re-enter every single line of that stack that's about 6.5 inches thick for us to figure out what was going on. And after I expended my entire legislative budget, I might have a document that would be useful. And you would think, given the fact that we spent $28 billion in other funds fees last time around, we might want to know where our starting point is this time. This bill is a good first step. It goes in that direction. It carries on with the same thing what Senator Burdick is trying to do on the tax credit side, and it gives us the ability to look at something and say, okay, here's the whole stack, what's working, what's not working, and what is the information we need to know to make sound decisions for the future of the state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Beyer.
It's an interesting concept. I think the Senator may recall, going back, I think it was in the McCall era, that they started the sunset review process where they periodically reviewed all of this, and I remember them being very taking it very seriously, and they went through this process for about 20 years, and I think the only agency that was ever eliminated was the Watchmakers Commission, which almost got reinstated the next session. The review process is a good one, but I'm a little cynical about it.
Madam Chair. Yes, Senator Burdick. Does Kelly Girls really exist still?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, actually it does.
It's called Kelly Services.
I think they've changed their name. That's right. I wasn't going to bring that up.
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, when my wife worked there, it was Kelly Girls. And if I use the new name, she says, are you calling me old? So I have learned not to use that name intentionally.
But to Senator Byers, but seriously, not just to review commissions. We don't actually go back in time and review things that we do in this body to determine whether or not it is still workable or not, or whether or not the circumstances on which we enacted legislation, let's say 10 years ago or 20 years ago, is still necessary or needed. And as a result of that, you know, if you look at our own volumes, they keep growing. I believe that during this particular significant time of a downturn economy where we are now, that we need to be just as judicious as we ask our agencies to be. And so if we don't review, if we don't have a process of our own to begin looking at what is still necessary and needed, what is workable or not, or asking our own self the question, is there still the value that we thought we were going to realize at the time that we implemented the legislation? And so I do think we need some process for that kind of review.
Madam Chair, if I follow up to Senator Byer's question also. I voted against annual sessions, but the public decided that we're going to come here every year now because we need more fiscal and sounder fiscal responsibility, and we don't know what we don't know. That's our literal problem right now.
So I know, Senator Winters, you have ways and means, but that makes me wonder about how this bill would relate to the really, really exhaustive review of every state agency that the Ways and Means Committee is going through, or the newly reconstituted Legislative Audits Committee.
Well, there's two elements. You have the review of the fiscal side of it, but you also have, which Ways and Means doesn't always get into, the programmatic piece, and we don't always get into the whole look at commissions and what have you. So I see two different distinct paths, if you will. And I think when Senator Byers mentioned the years of the McCall, when you did have that was placed automatically on programs and legislation that required a review. You know, that's beyond just talking about the budgetary aspects.
And Madam Chair, I would, because I've been involved in the other fees debate for two sessions now, I would point out that our Chief Legislative Fiscal Officer will tell you that he doesn't have the staff time to go into the other funds' budgets in much detail. And if we call last session, we passed basically a $14 billion budget out, and he even wanted a half dozen more analysts to get that out on time, and we virtually left untouched the $28 billion figure because we didn't know what was in it.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for bringing this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Testimony. And looks like we have two people signed up to testify, so I'll call them both together, Amelia Porterfield and Ryan Fisher. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you. Senator Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Amelia Porterfield, and I'm here on behalf of Service and Employees International Union Local 503. We are coming in opposition to this particular bill today with a few concerns. One is, with all due respect to the bill sponsors, we do believe that Ways and Means is the appropriate place in the legislative process for this review to happen. It happens every 2 years, and with the advent of annual sessions, there are additional opportunities than there have been in the past to do that review. We think that's the right place for it to occur, and that during these tough economic times, adding an additional layer of government to do that review is not a good priority at this time. And speaking of looking into other funds' budgets, a lot of what those other funds are federally required programs. And so I don't know that using a lot of state resources to decide whether we're going to continue TANF or Medicaid or those programs that are federally required to do is a good use of resources, especially when we have such a tough time right now with the current fiscal realities in providing services. And we think that having the agencies focusing on delivering those services out in the communities rather than working to develop information and a lot of the requirements that a Census Commission might ask of them, that the priority should really be on delivering those services. We wouldn't want to distract the agencies from that. The state of Texas has had a Sunset Advisory Commission for quite a few years, and this bill speaks to having some staff and an executive director for this commission. Doesn't go into much detail on that, but I looked up the state of Texas, and if we followed that model, it's quite an endeavor. That commission employs 32 staff, the executive director, 8 assistant directors and senior staff, 17 policy advisors, and 6 other administrative staff. And Texas only reviews agencies every 12 years. So if we're talking about use of resources, having that additional layer of government doesn't seem to be the right priority at this time. And I'm not sure what the cost to the state is. The bill references appropriation by the legislature to pay those staff, but I'm not sure what the Ways and Means process in this cycle would do to find that funding, considering the current realities. So for those reasons, we're opposed to the bill, and glad to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. How about if we hear from the panel, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. My name is Ryan Fisher, and I'm currently serving as the co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon, and I'm also a former Kelly girl. So I'll add that for the record. The Human Services Coalition certainly encourages the continual examination of our public structures and the infrastructure that supports them. We feel that there are currently some examples of ways that we've done that very successfully in Oregon. Specifically to DHS, we had the recent transition to the Oregon Health Authority in DHS, which refined missions and priorities. And you have examples in DHS of the transformation effort, which has really streamlined a lot of the processes within that agency. I think these are examples of ways that we can get at this goal in a way that is a little less disruptive to the other missions of the agencies, and we would encourage exploring those paths perhaps as an alternative way to get to this same goal. We have not taken a formal position on this bill, but I think it's one that would probably cause a lot of concern to our members. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. I have a feeling that I see your Facebook page being updated even as we speak. Okay. Senator Beyer.
Well, just comment, Madam Chair. I think I disagree with the comments about the Ways and Means process. That's really not their job. Their job is to make sure that the budgets are reasonable for programs that are established by the Assembly, usually established through a policy committee. I don't think we do have a really good process for looking at that. I'm not sold that this is the way to do it, but I think there is an issue there in terms of reviewing agencies, and it's not Ways and Means.
Senator Farioli, do you have a question?
You know, I was just thinking the same thing. I've spent some time on Ways and Means subcommittees and even the Revenue Committee, and I was thinking that unions have made tremendous contribution to combing out budgets and looking at agencies for changes in direction, particularly tax expenditure limitations, places where we've given tax subsidies to others. And I know that and it must have been 05, no, it was 03, 05, and 05, 07, where Ryan Deckert was revenue chair, there were formal reports received by the Revenue Committee about what agency things we shouldn't be doing and what tax advantages we shouldn't be giving, real recommendations for change and savings. And my experience mirrors Senator Beyer. After, you know, 4 years of an outside look at the budget, I think we eliminated one tax credit, and it was it was one nobody cared about anymore. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, so much of the fee revenue, this is a slight digression, gets swept. You know, and you can make the argument that these are important inputs that get made through the Ways and Means process, but at the end of the day, the legislature overrides those all the time. And, you know, if we see that the need is immediate and great, we'll go ahead and just swipe the money. So I guess I would say that having ombudsperson or having other folks look at purpose and function, you know, in an audit, a programmatic approach to the taxes and fees would be a better way, I think, to do it than in the heat of battle in 6 months at the long session and 2 months in the short session. So it ought to be continuous, and I think this is an extension of the idea of continuous improvement. So I don't mean to be argumentative. I'll just point out unions have a history of putting forward those very ideas, the latest being the ideas that we've seen being considered in this legislative session. And the Ways and Means process is so compressed and so focused on new changes in the agency directions that you really don't get a chance to go look at the you know, the last 6 or 10 years history of the agency. And now I feel like Denny Jones pointing out what we did in 03 and 09 and 04 and 02 and back in 97. And this is what happens in your end.
And were you a Kelly girl in those years?
You know, no, I was not, but I really appreciate the sense of humor with which the witnesses brought forth that moment. I hope it doesn't land him in a situation where someone alleges that he has created an uncomfortable working environment.
Chair Rosenbaum, if I could, Senator Ferrioli, I appreciate your comments, and I guess I would say that, and the notice of the work that our union has done, especially recently, and coming forward with other ideas, I think that that shows that there are current places in the process as it stands to make sure that those ideas are able to come forward, and I think the decisions made within Ways and Means then or other committees to go forward with those opportunities or not is the an adequate way to do that, and I don't know that we need another set of systems to do so.
Madam Chair, just a comment. You know, we ought to get together on this because clearly what we're talking about is not the process but the approach. An ad hoc approach may be less effective than a programmatic approach. That's the only point I wanted to make.
Senator Byer.
You know, one of the nice things, if we choose to do this, of having annual sessions is we could actually use the interim with through the policy committees to actually go in and do this kind of work and be in a position to make recommendations later on. So I think there's, the idea of the sunsetting or looking at things makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure we need a new body to do that, but we could better use the time that legislators have.
Okay. So I don't see any more questions. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And is there anyone else who wants to testify on Senate Bill 340? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 340. And we are also tasked with confirming appointments, and we have one appointment to consider today, and so I will open a public hearing on the appointment of Michael Jordan as Director of the Department of Administrative Services. And if you'd like to come forward. Good afternoon, and welcome back to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum. This is the first time I've been through one of these, and so I guess I'll make an assumption that you'd like to hear just a few brief comments, and then I'd be prepared to answer any questions you might have. For the record, my name is Michael Jordan. I'm currently the acting director at DAS and acting chief operating officer. You have my background information, so I won't go into that in depth, but I thought I'd make a few brief comments about at least why I think I'm here and why the governor asked me to come. Really, at its essence, the governor asked me to come take a look at building a new management approach to state government, an approach that's more consistent, more coherent, more collaborative, and ultimately more accountable across all state agencies. In other words, I think coming to break down silos, drive more consistent business and management practices across those agencies. We are currently very fragmented in the way we manage across state agencies, and you can pick almost any management system and find its fragmentation. With that broad charge in mind, I think I have really three major areas of work that the governor has charged me with. First of all, his expectation is that we rebuild the two-year budget. That new budget process should be pointed at outcomes, not necessarily at organized by agency. I think by definition almost that tool will end up being programmatic in nature rather than departmental in nature. It certainly needs to be more transparent and more useful as a tool, not only as a management tool, but also as a tool for appropriation of resources. Currently, the tools we use for the budget are not very accessible. They're not very transparent, and as we just heard in the previous testimony, difficult to know the cumulative effects of some of the aspects of the budget. And then lastly, Certainly, the budget has to include some kind of performance regime, measurement regime, so that we can actually come back at the end of a two-year cycle and give the legislature some sense of how we performed over that period. The governor would also like us to take a hard look at putting the two-year budget cycle in a longer context of strategic planning. He's asked for a 10-year strategic budget. I think that's a recognition of many of the challenges that we face in the state, both internally to state government and changing the way we do business, but also the substantive areas of change that we wish to accomplish in the state of Oregon are often long-term endeavors, and they involve long-term trade-offs in the allocation of resources. And so he would like to build a 10-year long-range budget plan that then we would continually amend and try to put our two-year budget process within that context. Secondly, I think it comes as no shock to anyone that a big part of what I'm expected to do is take a look at what I call our backroom services, HR, IT, accounting, budgeting, all of those backroom, if you will, services, indirect, if you will, costs, are a substantial part of what we spend in state government. Certainly, that discussion starts with the Department of Administrative Services, but it doesn't end there. We layer usually three levels of indirect costs on the direct costs of any program in state government. There's a DAS assessment, there's an agency indirect, and then usually there are indirect costs embedded in the service division itself. We need to take a hard look, and if we are the most efficient and most effective at delivering those backroom services before we start looking at our direct service costs and the direct services to citizens in the state of Oregon. And then lastly, the kind of longer-term effort, if you will, and the governor has already started a discussion with the legislature this session about two of our major delivery systems, healthcare and education. But the third element of my work in broad brushstrokes is to take a look at those delivery systems, try to convene the stakeholders around them, and look at their architecture and how we appropriate revenues across those systems. Those systems are almost in every case vertically integrated. They don't just involve a state agency. They usually at the retail end involve either a local government or a nonprofit or some combination thereof. And often it's federal funding that flows through to a number of those services. So they're very vertically integrated in their governance, they're integrated in their management, and they're integrated in their finance. My job over the long term will be to take a look at how are we providing those services? How does that system work? And are we optimizing our investments in every piece of the system so that it flows well and we hand off the work product in an efficient way? With all of those three things in mind, if we make progress and we're successful, I think we will start to get at what I perceive as another issue that we face, and when I say we, I think all of us, both policymakers and managers of state programs, and that is that there is a breakdown in the relationship. And I will cite thousands of pages of statute every 2 years that don't tell us what to do in state government. They tell us how to do it. And I think that comes fundamentally from a lack of trust. I in no way want to say that the legislature does not have an oversight role of state government, not only what, but how we do it. However, if we're going to be more effective in our management, that has to be done predominantly by the management of state government. And I see it as my charge to try and make that happen. And my intent is to convene the larger agencies, probably the top 20, attempt to build them into a management team, to look at those items that I've listed, and try to manage this enterprise more as an enterprise and not as, I think I have the number right, at least from my legislative guide, 92 separate silos that don't really collaborate well together in many cases. With that, Madam Chair, I'm thankful for the opportunity. I stand ready to try and answer some of your questions.
Senator Beyer.
Well, Michael, I'm very pleased to hear you say that. My memory goes back to a time when I used to call it the executive department director, was truly the chief operating officer in the state, and you knew who it was, and it was sort of respected and feared. We haven't had that for at least a decade or more. I mean, in my mind, John Yonker was the last one who was in that role, and I think we need that. I will tell you, as a former administrator of a small state agency, DAS was less than helpful and often got in the way. And one area that I know a little bit about, real estate, DAS was the worst landlord I ever had. So I wish you well in that, and I hope you pull that off. It's hard, but I know your experience as both a county executive and a city manager gives you at least the academic training and background that you might be able to make some sense out of all of this. So I appreciate your attitude.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Burdick.
You talked about, I'm sorry, we stepped out for a minute. Maybe you covered this, but you talked about the overlapping areas of kind of leakage, for lack of a better word, for the cost of state services. Can you give us, for instance, of something in your past where you've dealt with this and how you dealt with it?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, I can give you a past experience and perhaps some impression of, in my sage 13 and a half days now in state government, what I've observed. My most recent experience is at Metro. In the post 9/11 recession, we, as many other local governments and state government, were looking at cuts. We were actually looking at several cycles of figuring out who wasn't going to be there on July 1st, which is very debilitating to any organization if you do it often enough. And so I asked inside the agency, because I had observed it, that how many people did we have in central services, so HR, IT, accounting, et cetera, how many FTE and how much were we spending? And then I asked for an assessment of people who were doing similar jobs embedded in the departments. The report back came that we had 73 FTE, and we were spending roughly $13 million on central services. Interestingly enough, we had about 74 FTE, and we're spending about $13.5 million in the departments doing the same kinds of work. And now, I'm not saying they were doing exactly the same work, but they were doing the same kinds of work. Through that process, we went on a very methodical review of those systems and eliminated significant amounts of that internal service indirect cost to our departments. I think that exists here, too. One small example, we have 49 FTE in HR at the Department of Administrative Services. There are 66 FTE in Human Resources at the Department of Corrections, a similar number at the Department of Human Services, and again at ODOT. IT, quite frankly, is an even more expansive overlap of service providers. Again, I don't want to say for sure in my 13 and a half days that I know those people are doing duplicative services, but I would sense that if we were to examine those processes across those different silos, we would find efficiencies in those areas. Secondly, we have, and I've testified this in other committees, we certainly have span of control and level of management issues that we have to get our heads around. And that can't be done agency by agency either. It's going to have to be done as a collaborative effort across government. And so we have multiple areas where I think we can get at those kinds of what I would call structural inefficiencies that we need to take a hard look at, and they haven't been looked at in many, many years, I think.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is music to my ears, because in the economic climate that we're working with now, we are causing real pain to real people. And so every dime that you can save for something that is being duplicated or can be done differently and more efficiently will have real life impact on people. So I'm here to support you in any way I can in that effort.
Thanks, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Burdick. Yes, Senator Farioli.
Thanks, Madam Chairman. I was just studying your resume. I think it's fascinating. I see that there was a gap in your educational attainment, and you went, you quit school to go to work, is what I gather from this, and it was a doggone good job, too, doing CAD design for PP&L and teaching others how to do that, and that seemed to be a rising opportunity because it led to doing some pretty complicated systems scheduling and design for the transmission system. So that seems like it was pretty challenging work. But then you took it. Then you went to the dark side. You got from about 1989 to the present. You've been in public service from that point to this point. And that's great from an experiential standpoint. But you're coming from a corporate culture that's developed around, you know, the growth of government and the government as solution to many problems. And Lord knows Metro is, you know, an animal of creation. How will you change the corporate culture and in what direction as the, you know, as that person who's supposed to lead the Department of Administrative Services boldly into the new century? So how's that going to happen?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Farrioli. I think I have some experience at changing corporate culture, even in the public sector. I would say that if you went to ask some folks who were Metro watchers over the 8 years that I was there, you would get a story that the corporate culture has changed dramatically there in two significant ways. One, Metro, when I came, was what I would call a holding company model. The zoo, the convention center, transportation planners, the solid waste utility, really very disparate lines of business. And, oh, by the way, they were managed as very disparate lines of business. But in trying to change that culture so that, and we were having great difficulty, much as state government is having, at driving consistent management practices across those very different lines of business. Not that every line had to have exactly the same backroom support and et cetera, but we were having great difficulty in just consistency of management and business practice. And so pulling folks together and trying to get them to see that they were a part of a whole culture and something that we were trying to accomplish in the region, and in the case of Metro, we were able to create a community development ethic. In other words, everything we did went to the livability, economy, environmental health, or the development opportunities of the metropolitan region. It was a way to link people together in a common cause, which is really the only way you actually change culture. Secondly, if you ask people outside of Metro how Metro acted during that time frame, at the beginning of that time in 2003, we were very much a reach for the authority lever agency. When we saw a problem, we reached for our authority and passed a law and made people do something. If you ask people about how we are today, we still pass laws, we still regulate, but the process of doing it is very different. We engage with stakeholders. The 360 degrees of the political compass, which is very frustrating, by the way, and try to get them to an actionable consensus. And if we can do that, then we have a tool to use authority to implement the solution. But it's a very different approach and a very different corporate culture that has to, different skill sets have to be inside the culture to do that rather than just draft up laws and pull the lever. So my experience at Metro, I think, is very analogous, I will admit, not on the scale. That is probably the biggest formidable impression that certainly hit me in the first few weeks is just the scale of this endeavor and trying to get some sense of your arms around it and how do you organize to get at that scale. But the principles are very much the same and a very similar experience, I think, to what we face here in state government.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Follow up.
In 03, your hand went to the tiller of Metro, you know, and you've been guiding that institution. Do you remember how many employees there were in Metro in 03?
There were about, and I will say about 1,100 to 1,200 full-time equivalents, regular employees, and at the peak of a year, we would cut somewhere around 1,700 or 1,800 checks. So, you know, seasonals, event staff, those kinds of things.
And today, Madam Chair?
I would say Metro is hovering just under 1,000 regular full-time employees, and we cut at peak in August, I would say about 1,600 checks.
Okay. If you, Madam Chair, one final question.
Sure.
If you encounter a INDAS, a function that would more properly be fulfilled by agency people, how will you direct those activities? Will you shed those functions, devolve them, get rid of them, push them outside DAS so that they'll at least show up on your column of the ledger as an efficiency, although that we'll still be doing, the same services just elsewhere?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, the short answer is yes. It is a much more complicated process than that, usually. Actually, the folks in DAS have been working diligently in trying to look at a new business model for them, which is much more customer-oriented. And they've come up with a couple of ideas, which I think have merit. We need to work on them a little more, but are actually looking at most of the service provision in a utility-based model where there would be a customer board that would actually pick a provider, didn't have to be DAS, and then negotiate the rate structure and the service level of delivery, whatever that happened to be, HR or whatever it is, for that service. I think that model has merit. It will drive changes in management culture and employee working processes. We also have some systemic issues, IT systems particularly, that we have to get at. But the model itself, I think, has merit. Secondly, there are some services which potentially could be a market-based service where not only, like a utility, you'd have one provider that you'd negotiate a rate structure with, but potentially multiple providers that you could compete for. Now, I will say that with some degree of apprehension. We in government put a lot of restrictions on our service providers, even internal service providers. We have very strict purchasing rules. We have collective bargaining agreements which have our workforce act in certain ways, and we have certain compensation structures that are by contract. In many cases, that is, and capitalization of a private-like business is a difficult thing inside government, although it has been done. So that was a little more problematic, that marketplace competition model, a little more problematic. But I think the utility model has great promise. And if the provider of choice was outside of DAS, we'd move it.
Madam Chair, I think we're lucky to have the applicant. I like what I'm hearing about the competitive model internally and the market model externally. And the real question will be, identifying how you take input from your customers,
mm-hmm.
Your state agency heads, and I hope you'll include the 90 legislators as a part of your customer base. So I'll be looking for the suggestion box somewhere here in the Capitol building.
I'll make sure it's there, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli, and I would agree that we are very lucky to have you before us and willing to take on this challenge. I wanted to ask you about a problem that I think is not a new problem, but that is that we don't do a very good job, it seems like, of advertising what we do as a state to the public. And I think recent surveys have shown that when you ask people to identify a government service, they can't really do it because they don't really think of the things that they depend on every day as being something they can recognize. So mm-hmm. I just was curious to hear your thoughts about how we could improve the image of government, and then I guess your thoughts about the fact that people who work in these government structures sometimes feel like the only thing they hear is bad news about them when they're working really, really hard. So I guess to tie this all together in the form of a question would be what your thoughts are about morale, image, and then how you would identify success in this new role that you've stepped up to take on.
There's a lot buried in there. Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, communication and how we have a better image, if you will. The really short answer and perhaps way too succinct is do better. If we can deliver better, we'll have a better image. So that's one thing that I think is basic to it. Secondly, we don't speak about government in terms that people get, especially folks like myself. I've been doing this 26 years, and there's a certain government speak that comes out of us, and we have to find a way to communicate in ways that has that have traction with citizens. So I've been involved in a number of discussions in the last couple of years about the kind of language we use when we talk about the services we provide and what is important to citizens. And you find, I think, that if at least most of the research shows that if you talk about the things we do in terms that people understand, they get the importance of having a public sector of certain public services. We often call them public structures, and people get it. They get roads and bridges, and they get all of those kinds of things that allow the economy to work well. We sometimes think they don't get it, but I believe they do. Secondly, if there's one thing I have been very impressed with so far, and not in a positive way in my travels, is how little thought and effort we give to communication, period, whether it's externally out into the community or our stakeholders or internally to our own employees. When we start to do the changes that we're anticipating doing in state government, we are going to have communication strategies. Most of us, when change comes and we know little about it or hear little about it, fill in the vacuum with our worst nightmare. And it makes it so hard to be able to communicate the purposes and then and actually have change implemented and have it have traction. I'm fond of saying that I won't be able to change a thing inside state government from the fifth floor of DAS. It just isn't going to work. We will have to build a leadership team that across state government that is prepared to make these changes. We'll have to think about how we communicate and engage with people who have to actually make it happen. And then we'll have to hold ourselves accountable over time. One of the big keys for doing that is being transparent up front. At Metro, I was fond of saying at the beginning of a change process, I guarantee you that a couple of years from now, we'll figure out that we did something really wrong, and we're going to have to go change it. I guarantee it. And you have to be very transparent about kind of the atmospherics around those changes, because people do get afraid, and they're human beings. We're not managing 32,000 computers. We're managing human beings, and they come with desires and fears and hopes and baggage that they've been carrying around their whole lives. And we have to get smarter as leaders in state government about how we communicate, how we have traction when we do communicate, and how we engage people in these changes. So I don't know if I got exactly at your question, Madam Chair, but communication is a huge issue.
Well, thank you for those thoughtful comments and for your willingness to step up and take this on. And I think you've answered all our questions for today. I'm sure we'll see you back. Senator Ferrioli?
If you'll indulge me with one more observation, the question that we'll answer over time is whether or not the state of Oregon was brilliant in its hiring away from Metro this excellent executive, or whether this was just part of Metro's plot to take over the rest of Oregon.
I don't think that requires a comment, but if you have one.
I've always found Senator Farioli to be astute in his observations.
Mark your calendars. You're first.
Okay. Thank you very much. So I will close the public hearing and open a work session on the appointment of Michael Jordan as Director of the Department of Administrative Services. And the Chair moves the Governor's appointment of Michael Jordan as Director of the Department of Administrative Services be sent to the floor with a be confirmed recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none. Is there any
objection, Madam Chair?
Okay, I see no objection to the motion. Motion carries. And Senator Burdick, I think that you missed your opportunity to carry our first batch of executive appointments, so would you like to carry this one?
I'd be honored, Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator Burdick will carry this appointment on the floor, and I'll close the work session. And we have one more bill to come before us, and we heard it previously, and I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 739. And Erin, could you tell us where we're at on 739?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 739 was originally heard on March 31st, and the bill requires Legislative Assembly to maintain reports of legislative committee witnesses and post reports on legislative website. We have a no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued, but there is a copy of both statements in the packets before you today.
Okay, thank you, Erin. And members, we did take testimony on this. Unfortunately, Senator Atkinson, who's the sponsor, is not with us today, but I'm sure is interested as he let me know in seeing this bill move forward. So I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Burdick.
I would move Senate Bill 739 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Burdick has moved Senate Bill 739 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Madam Chairman.
Senator Farioli.
I note that the SMS, the Statement of No Revenue Impact, and the Statement of Minimal Fiscal Impact are in the file, present, and available for all to see.
Thank you, Senator Farioli, for that astute observation. Any further discussion? Okay, is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries, and we will ask Senator Atkinson to carry this bill on the floor. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 739, and with nothing further to come before us today, members, we are adjourned.